I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order. It is Tuesday, March 7th, 2023. There is a quorum present. Representative Hansen, may I have a motion to approve the minutes from March 1st, 2023?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that the committee minutes for March 1st, 2023 be approved.
Thank you. Representative Hansen moves the approval of the minutes from March 1st, 2023. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes for March 1st, 2023 are approved. Now we have another set of minutes from March 2nd. Representative Hansen.
I would move the minutes for March 2nd, 2023.
Thank you. Representative Hansen moves the minutes from March 2nd, 2023. Any discussion on these minutes? Hearing none. All approve, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved from March 2nd, 2023. So our first bill before us is from Chair Vang. Chair Vang, would you like to move House File 1585?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 1585 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Go ahead and now that the bill is before us, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a simple policy bill. What it does is it will authorize the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to control or eradicate non-native phragmites in the same manner that the agency manages purple loosestrife under the Minnesota Noxious Weed Law. So there's no new cost, no new requirements, and it's rather strict policy. And I'm happy to take any questions from this.
Thank you. Are there any testifiers, Chair Vang?
No, but I believe someone in the department will be here if there are any questions.
Okay, we can move to member discussion. Are there any questions or discussion on Bill 1585? Okay, seeing no discussion, and I'm not aware of any amendments. So, Chair Vang, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I renew my motion. House File 1585 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you. House File 1585 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Agriculture Omnibus Bill. Thank you. And I believe our agenda, we are going to move to second bill, correct,
yes.
Chair Vang?
That's
so,
correct.
Would you like to move House File 2277 before the committee?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 2277 be referred to the Taxes Committee.
Right. Thank you for that motion. The bill is before us. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I present to you House File 2277, which would expand Minnesota's beginning farmer tax credit and make it better to support the next generation of farmers. Farming is capital intensive. Land in particular is hugely expensive, and that creates real challenges for young people and others who want to get started in farming. I've heard about this throughout my time in the legislature, and it's been a big part of my work in committee. Young people are excited about farming, but they could use a hand up. In 2017, Minnesota was among the first in the nation to pass a tax credit to help beginning farmers get onto the land. The law provides farmers an incentive to rent or sell ag assets to beginning farmers, helping them buy land, broker relationships, and get established in their operations. To date, well over 1,000 new farmers have been helped by this program, and it continues to be a more well-known and popular across the state. And now to the changes in my bill. First, my bill will increase the credit for sale of ag assets from 5 to 8% and up to $50,000. At present, a smaller percentage of farmers use this credit for sale of ag assets. Much like homeownership, only ag land is how farmers build generational wealth, and we want to make sure new farmers are afforded the same opportunity. Second, for Black, Indigenous, and farmers of color, my bill will increase the credit for sale of ag assets to 12%, giving them an extra leg up. I've heard from many emerging farmers, and they often aren't coming to a family operation, and so this is additional credit. We'll give them a let up in negotiating purchases and brokering relationships with existing operators. And third, my bill would expand this credit to family members for sale of ag land, allowing children and grandchildren to use this credit to assist with generational farm transition. As any farmer will tell you, generational transition is complex and costly. Providing this incentive will help more young farmers get started in agriculture, which is a unqualified win for the state. And fourth and finally, my bill would eliminate the sunset on this program. Without our action, this credit is set to expire of December this year. Now, all of these changes are made within the current funding cap, $6 million per year, with the remainder carrying forward. We've also retained the credit for beginning farmers to pay for farm business management courses and have maintained income limitations under the original bill. And finally, before I turn it to my testifiers, I want to highlight the 19 agricultural organizations who signed on to a letter of support in your packet. And a broad array of organizations is a testament to the value of this credit, and I'm eager to carry it forward for the next generation of farmers in our state. And with that, I will yield my time to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Vang. First testifier that we have on our list is Molly Byron, who's joining us remotely. Molly, when you are able, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Purcell and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Molly Byron, and it is my dream to transition my family farm located in Waseca, Minnesota, to the next generation. On behalf of myself and Minnesota Farmers Union, I'm here to testify in strong support to expand and improve access to the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit, allowing family members to participate and utilize the credit. I want to thank Chair Vang for her leadership on this proposal. I come from a multi-generational farm family where I'm part of the sixth generation to grow up on my farm. However, I didn't always know that I wanted to transition my family farm. When the pandemic hit in 2020, I found myself back home on the farm after living out of state for over 10 years. I ended up reconnecting with my agricultural roots and enrolled in farm business management at South Central College to learn how to manage my family farm while also utilizing the Farm Business Management Scholarship for beginning farmers. I am now in my third year of the program and a member of South Central College's Farm Business Management Advisory Board. Through this experience, I have had the opportunity to personally hear from farm business management instructors across the state about how much the Beginning Farm Tax Credit has changed the playing field for new and young farmers they work with. The Beginning Farm Tax Credit has become so critical to farm. Today, it is nearly impossible to farm without some kind of assistance. Young people just can't compete. And this bleeds into our rural communities, other businesses, and our schools. And there are so many young farmers in Minnesota who wish to transition their generational farm family, or their family farm, right now, but do not have the same opportunity for assistance. In most cases, we cannot afford to transition our farms by ourselves. Expanding the Beginning Farm Tax Credit could potentially alleviate farmland from also going on the market for sky high prices because more would consider and actually could take over a family farm. Just 2 weeks ago, I attended a two-day multi-generational farm transition retreat at South Central College with my family. And at this retreat, the room was completely filled with other farm families from across Minnesota. The facilitators shared that this was the largest group of families they have ever had in over 10 years they've been hosting this retreat, and even had to stop advertising the retreat because they ran out of space. So I am not alone. There are so many farm families just like my own. Right now, I honestly don't know if I'll be able to financially transition my family farm. And that reality is extremely overwhelming. But this is the reality for most farm families in Minnesota who have hopes of finding a way to continue their farm beyond the current generation. Thank you for the opportunity to share my support and that of Minnesota Farmers Union and for your support of beginning farmers. I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier, welcome back to the committee, Jane Winsberger, if you could identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jane Winsberger. I'm originally from Kenya, born and raised in a farm. Migrated here in 1998, went to school to be a nurse, worked in the nursing industry for 20 plus years before I decided to go back farming being my roots. I farm in Ogilvie, Kennebec County, Minnesota. I have 3.88 acres. Most of it is wetland. That's where I farm. I grow naturally organic vegetables. I'm very proud to support for this bill alongside with that of Minnesota Union, Farmers Union. First of all, I want to thank Madam Chair Veng for her leadership on the proposal. And I'm currently a member of the Emerging Farmers Working Group through the Department of Agriculture. Not only do we identify the barriers emerging farmers face, but we advise the department on ways to improve equity and access for the farmers like me. So, but I see in Minnesota, the state of Minnesota is working so hard to better serve the communities like mine, but there is room or there is an opportunity to do more. Today, I'm sitting here asking you to expand this beginning farmers tax credit so that people who look like me can benefit. Since it's so hard to buy a land for the emerging farmers, especially immigrant communities, farmers. It took me long time to have a farm. There are many challenges I faced in order to buy these 3.8 acres. As you heard, it's a wetland. That's what I could find. And still, with the farm, I have challenges. Unfortunately, these challenges are not unique to people who look like me, but other underserved communities in the great state of Minnesota. Expanding this tax credit program will address the challenges the beginning farmers face to acquire land or buy land easily. Incentives like this will help beginning farmers participate in this competitive real estate market, since the current real estate is very challenging market for people who cannot maneuver through. Thank you so much again, and I thank you again so much for what you are doing for us so that we can have equal shares in farming as a Minnesotan farmers. Thank you again.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier is Dustin Weiss. Please properly pronounce your name once you make your way up to the table for the record, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's Weiss, Dustin Weiss. I'm a fourth-generation rancher from Pequot Lakes in Cass County, Minnesota. I own an Angus ranch with a brother and sister, and we have one of the largest Angus ranches in Minnesota. I'd like to offer my support for the HF 2277. This bill would expand beginning farmer tax credit to additional new farmers across the state. Through this historic program, Minnesota has already been able to give a helping hand to young farmers like myself with starting family farms. The credit has already proven to be helpful for many young and beginning farmers across the state. This bill would continue to build on that investment by expanding the tax credit to make sure agriculture is accessible to others who want to farm. Whether it is opening the tax credit to allow for the sale of agriculture assets to family members or increasing the credit of historically underserved communities, this tax credit offers tangible benefits to the next generation of farmers, ranchers, and agriculture. The changes made today in today's legislation will not only help to continue to bring new farmers to agriculture, but help maintain the integrity of the tax credit. I'd like to thank the chair for her leadership on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The final testifier that we have listed before we open it up to the public is also joining us on Zoom, Lucas Sjostrom. If you are available, you may state your name and begin your testimony. He's just entering the Zoom room. Sure. Lucas Sjostrom, if you are there, please begin your testimony and state your name for the record.
Hello, good afternoon for the record. Lucas Sjostrom, Executive Director at the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Shostrom, can you turn your device maybe 90 degrees because you are you're sideways on our screen. Let's try that again.
For the record, Lucas Shostrom, Executive Director of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. I'll be very brief. Thank you, Chair and members, and thanks for the opportunity to participate remotely. I'd just like to share that our organization has worked hard on this at Minnesota Milk Producers Association. You are righting a wrong through this legislation. We've had opportunity for members who are uncles and nieces and nephews, business partners who are unrelated, to utilize this tax credit. And it just seems the intention of this as it came in was very good, but I believe expanding it to immediate family members is going to be how we create more beginning farmers in Minnesota and beginning dairy farmers in our selfish interest. So I'll take any questions you have, but that's all I wanted to share. Thank you so much for your work on this, Chair Vang, and thank you, committee members, for listening. Sorry for being sideways.
No problem at all. Thank you for joining us. Anyone else interested to testify from the audience? Okay, seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Discussion to the bill. Yes, Representative Harder.
Thank you, Representative Purcell, Chair Vang. I just need some clarification and help understanding something. So in the bill, it'd be on line 4.1, there's the paragraph. It says beginning July 1, 2023, $300,000 is annually appropriated from the general fund to the Rural Finance Authority to develop an online application system and administer the credits under this section. So I need help clarification. Is there not an online application? And if there isn't, we're going to be developing one. Then after that's developed, wouldn't this amount be less? Would be my question. Thank you.
Representative Bang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder, for your question. I will defer this to someone from the department if they can help me answer this question.
Thank you. We have a representative from the Department of Agriculture. Please state your name for the record. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. My name is Andrea Bobble. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you so much for the question, Representative Harder. We are actually working on an amendment. I think we'll work on in the next committee. That was something that we previously thought we would need in terms of funding to be able to do an online system, but we have found an alternate way to do that for less money, and so we are currently using that that platform right now for a lot less money. So we will not need that money, but we are working on an amendment to fix that.
Representative Harder?
Thank you.
Next up, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Vang, thank you for the bill. Couple of questions. You are increasing a lot of the tax credits, you're increasing eligibility, and yet you're actually lowering the cap on the annual amount the program can give out per year from $6 million down to 5.7. Is that correct?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, I don't believe that is correct. I believe, and I see Stu Laurie here, will probably be better to help answer the question to you as well to confirm that.
Mr. Laurie, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you so much, Chair Purcell. For the record, Stu Laurie with Minnesota Farmers Union. We're the folks to blame for any drafting errors in the bill. But the 5.7, it is under how it's currently drafted. What Deputy Commissioner Vobble described with the amendment would change that back up to $6 million. Basically, what the draft that you have lowered the amount available to the credit in order to allow for some pass-through for administering the program to the department. MDA has since realized that they have the funds internally to administer the program, and so they no longer need that pass-through. So with Chair Vang's blessing, that will be restored up to the $6 million that's been available to the credit in past years.
Lead Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. I noticed that the bill is going to take effect. Actually, it would be backdated to December 31st of 2022. So how would a farmer go about claiming that tax credit for 2023?
Chair Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, if I'm totally amenable to changing the date too as well. If you think there's a better date, I am open to having discussion with you as well.
Lead Anderson.
Pardon?
Lead Anderson, go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I guess my point is most farmers have already filed their tax return for 2022. The deadline for a lot of us is March 1st, so that date has passed. I would assume they would have to file an amended return, which adds additional cost, and maybe there's somebody who could help
yes.
us with that.
Madam Chair, if you can ask, I believe it's Matt, to come before the committee. Thank
Welcome.
You.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Matt McDevitt. I'm the Ag Finance Supervisor for the Rural Finance Authority. Representative Anderson, in answer to your question, if there was a transaction, say for instance, you know, the family transaction were allowed to take place and they sold some land in January, we would just go ahead and process it as such. January. So process it as such in June. There, we get a number of people that won't submit their applications until, you know, October for transactions that took place in July that aren't family right now. So as long as we still have the money available, we basically will process them all the way back to January 1st at any point of the year.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. So in what year then would they claim that tax credit? The following
Chair,
year or the year in which it actually took place?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it is in the year it actually took place. For tax purposes, when the money changes hands, it has to be in the year that it occurred.
Go ahead, Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Yeah. So that means filing an amended return then, correct, for the farmer?
Excuse me, could you repeat that, please?
So to claim that credit, he would have to file an amended return, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, so this would be for, you know, any transactions taking place in 2023, they wouldn't actually be filing the taxes for 2023 until April of 24. So they would need to file an amended return now. If for whatever reason this is backdated 2022 sometime, then yes, that would be the case potentially.
Okay.
Representative Anderson, any additional
One more vote? Question, Madam
yep.
Chair. Thank you. Representative Vang, thanks for trying to enlarge the program. You know, it's been around for 5 or 6 years now, and there's a pretty big buildup in the program. It looks like there's about $24 million available, and appreciate raising the caps on the amount that would be eligible for the credit. And you have an 8% cap for some and 12% for some as well. And just wondering, being there is so much additional money in the kitty, so to speak, what about increasing that cap to 12% for all beginning farmers? Had you thought about that?
Representative Vang. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for your comments. I think when, you know, I've looked at every legislation through the eyes of equity, and when we talk about not all farmers get this equal opportunities towards becoming towards getting resources, and so the 12% for socially disadvantaged farmers recognizes that inequity that we have for not just young farmers but also for young farmers of color as well. This bill seeks to address that inequity for farmers of different backgrounds and ages.
Right, our next committee member, Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Vang, for bringing this bill forward and all of your work on supporting emerging farmers. I think I really appreciate the addition about socially disadvantaged farmers. I think that's really important. I believe that some of kind of the worst violence that our country has done has been around land, and I think any way that we can work to give land back to people that have been denied it or that have had their land taken from them or stripped from them is really important. So thank you for your work on this.
Do you care to respond, Senator Vang?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to add that that has always been an ongoing issue, and I look forward to getting the support of the committee and moving forward. So,
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Representative Purcell and Chair Vang. Just a couple of questions. One I just want to clarify is the socially disadvantaged farmers, they have to be beginning farmers as well, correct? Or is that open to all?
Okay.
Yes.
Representative Vang?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes, that is correct.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, thank you, I was just wanting to make sure I was reading that correctly. And then also, there's the, on lines 2.20 to 2.23, talks about the, you know, the assessed value of the prop, you know, the agriculture asset. You know, it has to be at least 80% of fair market value. And that also does apply to, you know, the credit that would be available to the socially disadvantaged farmers as well, correct?
Representative Vang?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe so. That's correct. Representative Nielsen.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to just sometimes when you know, things work through, sometimes they don't always line up, but I just was wanting to clarify that. And I think it's a good idea. Oftentimes, you know, whether it's family or others, you know, to have an 80% threshold, sometimes you already get a family discount on things. And so making sure that we're not giving credit to somebody that was maybe already gifted, you know, a significant portion of it, I think, is beneficial. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I thought of one additional question from one of the testifiers that was up there. And they don't have to come back up again. But Chair Vang, if somebody has already used this program once and gotten a 5% credit, can they come back and do it again to get this higher credit available now with, if this bill becomes law?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe there's a definition of what a beginning farmer is, and perhaps Mr. Sullivan can help find that definition, because I think after a certain number of years, you're no longer considered a beginning farmer.
Mr. Sullivan?
Madam Chair and Chair Vang, that's correct. For purposes of this program, beginning farmer, and I'm quoting from 41B.0391, a portion of the statute that's not in the bill before you, beginning farmer is a resident of Minnesota who is seeking entry or has entered farming within the last 10 years. So, but to my knowledge, though, you know, within that 10 years, if somebody purchased maybe a tractor after previously purchasing a farm, Mr. McDevitt might know, but I'm not sure that the statute addresses whether a person could be eligible for multiple credits, for multiple sales, I guess, in this case, to a beginning farmer.
Mr. McDevitt?
Okay. Madam Chair, representatives, so the tax credit, the main tax credit actually goes to the asset owner, not to the beginning farmer themselves. So as long as the beginning farmer qualifies, asset owners can continue to qualify, and they could continue, you know, potentially for 10 years in a row, say, for instance, with the same beginning farmer, if they continued to sell them assets 10 years in a row.
Representative Anderson? Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Chau.
Thank you, Chair Purcell. Just a comment. Thank you for adding a digital piece to this for application online. I think it's much needed with today's digital age and access to mobile. And so, greatly appreciate it.
Okay, seeing no other discussion, Chair Vang, do you have any closing comments on your bill?
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity and on expanding the beginning farmers tax credit. When I think about the impact of this bill and other investments in beginning farmers, I know that it's just not about those individual families. It's also about vibrant rural communities, full classrooms in rural schools, and thriving mainstream businesses. And I'm proud to carry this bill and ask for your support. And therefore, I renew my motion that House File 2277 be re-referred to the Taxes Committee.
All those in favor of Chair Vang's motion, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion prevails. House File 2277 is re-referred to the Taxes Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, we will switch to House File 2313, Representative Purcell, border-to-border broadband grant program. And Representative Purcell, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 2313 before the committee.
All right.
To be included, for possible inclusion in an agricultural omnibus bill.
All right. Thank you, Reps. And Purcell. I'd like to note that we also have the DE1 amendment, and because it did not make the committee deadline for amendments, we will just discuss the DE1 amendment, not take any formal action, and there will be future opportunities to take formal action on the DE1 amendment. And I will just move the DE1 amendment before the committee for discussion. And Reps. And Purcell, do you want to talk about the DE1?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2313 would bring more money to border-to-border broadband grant program. It matches the governor's funding request of $276 million over the next 2 years. I would like to extend my apologies for not getting this amendment in on time. First-year mistake, lesson learned. So my apologies about the tardiness of the amendment. So this bill does two things. It adds that $276 million to the standard border-to-border grant program. It increases the per-grant cap from $5 million to $10 million. And then the amendment that we are only just discussing also has a lower population density program and allocating additional funds so that we could fund up to 75% of those project costs in the most difficult to reach parts of the states of the state. Let's see. So our state broadband grant program has been distributing funds since 2015 and has a proven record of partnering with local governments and private businesses to bring broadband to communities that have no or slow service. Other states have even used Minnesota as a model to design their own grant programs. The grant program has historically been funded with one-time money from state surplus dollars. House File 2313 would, again, do just that. Additional funding is necessary to ensure the standard grant program does not miss a construction season while we wait for federal funds to arrive. Providers and communities that have large area or no large areas of no service often need to complete work in phases because each project can only receive $5 million. Increasing the cap to $10 million would relieve some planning stress on providers and their local partners. Last year, the legislature allocated $30 million of federal funding to create the Lowered Population Density Pilot Program. This program allows the state to pay for up to 75% of project costs. These projects are in the hardest to serve area, which will almost certainly never receive broadband service without some state investment. I have an amendment, the DE, that would continue funding this program for the next 2 years. I've learned a lot about this program, but I have testifiers who know more than I do on this issue, so now I'd like to yield my time to testifiers, Madam Chair.
All right, the first testifier is Nathan Zacharias from Association of Minnesota Counties. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Nathan Zacharias, and I am the Technology Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. I want to begin by thanking you, Chair Vang, Representative Purcell, Representative Anderson, Representative Liz Lagarde, and all the other bill authors for their work in bringing this bill forward today. I'm here today to ask for your support of House File 2313, a bill that would provide the border-to-border grant program housed in the Office of Broadband Development with an additional $276 million. And as Representative Purcell said, it would also increase the per-grant cap from $5 million to $10 million per project. 12% of Minnesota households and businesses do not have access to broadband speeds that meet our state's statutory speed goals. And that number jumps to nearly 38% in rural Minnesota. The demand for high-speed broadband is not going away, and every facet of modern life and business and farming depends on it. It is true that the state is set to receive funding to deploy broadband through the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, but the Governor's Broadband Task Force 2022 annual report found a $426 million gap between all available state funds, estimated federal funding, and what it would cost to connect every household and business in the state. House File 2313 would help us close that gap. Additionally, the timeline for when federal funding will arrive in state coffers is unclear. Recent federal broadband programs were hampered by significant delays, causing the state's grant program to miss the entire construction season in 2021. And we cannot afford for that to happen again. The funding in House File 2313 would serve as a critical bridge between what we currently have available for funding and the forthcoming federal funds through the IIJA. And just briefly to the DE amendment that we're discussing today, I just wanted to touch on this. I know it'll be perhaps added at a later date, but the Association of Minnesota Counties supported the creation of the Lower Population Density Pilot Program last session and strongly supports the addition of the $60 million to the program for the next 2 years. Counties with small populations and equally small tax bases have found it nearly impossible to deploy broadband in their communities. This low-density program allows the state to match up to 75% of the project cost in some of the hardest to serve areas of the state, and it creates a separate pool of money for communities that can't contribute significant local tax dollars to fund a broadband grant. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
All right, thank you, Nathan. The next person we have is Steve Georgie, Executive Director. Yes. If you could please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang. My name is Steve Georgie. I'm the Executive Director of the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools, better known by the acronym RAMS. I served on the Governor's Broadband Task Force for the past 4 years. I also serve on the Minnesota Rural Broadband Coalition Advisory Board for the past 4 years as well. I'm certainly here today in support of Representative Purcell's bill to fund broadband expansion in Minnesota at the tune of $278 million for the biennium. I want to remind the committee here today that Minnesota has set benchmarks for broadband expansion. The first goal was by 2022, all Minnesotans would be connected to wireline service of 25 down and 3 up. We did not succeed in accomplishing that goal. We currently have 291,000 unserved Minnesotans that have less than 100 down, 20 up. And in rural Minnesota, 180,000 Minnesotans are without 25-3 service. So we're going back to copper telephone wire service in many locations. So we have to do better. We have to fund. We missed two grant cycles in the state of Minnesota in 2018 and 2021. We can't afford to miss anymore. We're falling behind. One of the other goals in the legislature is that Minnesota would be in the top five states in the country for broadband connection and access. We're currently ranked between 19th and 26th, depending on which poll you look at. So once again, the need and the demand is certainly there. Nathan touched on the estimated cost to connect all Minnesotans, and you heard that, and we are sorely missing. I'd like to give you an example of what's happening up on the Iron Range where we have bedrock, and it's increasingly difficult and challenging for companies to do projects. We're very fortunate that we have some good providers that are submitting for broadband grants at the $5 million level and have succeeded. But here's an example of a project, fortunately, for the Boys Fort Reservation area by Lake Vermilion, up to Orr and Net Lake. It started off 3 years ago looking at 440 homes on the tribal reservation land, and simply because of cost and the opportunity to succeed with a project, it was not completed. Just this year, they were awarded a $19.8 million grant from the NTIA Tribal Broadband Connectivity Program. So now this project can actually cover 3,200 homes and businesses. so they can go from the reservation on Lake Vermilion up to the city of Orr, cover most of Pelican Lake up to Net Lake where their other elementary school is. So what's interesting is they have to lay 375 miles of new fiber optic cable. And in the assessment to do this project, 98% of the locations were unserved. 98%. So we have a long way to go to get connected. Another example is Paul Bunyan is another provider that's going to do a project just outside of the center of the universe, as Senator Tomasoni said, the city of Chisholm. The neighboring township is Balkan. And a little bit northeast of that is another township named Angora. So looking at that project, the passing density in Angora is 3.31 homes per mile. The cost per each passing is $15,558. In Balkan, the passing density is 5.06. The average cost of passing is $9,700. So average on this project, the average is 4.3 per mile and $11,650. So there's no way this project could be done if not for the low-density pilot program that's in effect today with the $30 million. We're hoping that they get awarded the grant.
Director
but what's
Steve,
also interesting,
Sorry, Director Steve, if you can please wrap up your testimony. I want to make sure the other testifiers have enough time to share their testimony to us well.
Sure. But I just want to make this point. So if they get the 75% grant, they have to borrow money for their portion, which is $1.8 million. The project is expected to lose $412,000 in the first 4 years of operation. They finally earned $5,800 in 2029. This is the reality of projects in rural Minnesota with low density. So we really support the amendment and the bill itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Steve. The next testifier is Brent Christensen from Minnesota Telecom Alliance. We do have a very full agenda, so if you can please keep your testimony hopefully under 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will absolutely do that. For the record, my name is Brent Christensen, and I'm the President and CEO of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, or MTA. MTA membership is a mix of family-owned companies, cooperatives, privately held and publicly traded broadband providers throughout Minnesota. While MTA members have different corporate structures, one thing we all have in common is our commitment to serving Minnesota. I'm here to fully support House File 2313 and very much appreciate Representative Purcell's bringing it forward. And I would ask you to support the DE amendment when it comes time. We have long debated the 50% broadband grant match. We all know at some point a 50% match won't make sense as we get more and more state covered by broadband. The remaining projects will inevitably require a greater state match. The problem is that these projects require more state money and consistently lose out to other grant applications who put in more of their own money, which score higher. We need to establish the sub-grant program permanently within the border-to-border grant program, where the Office of Broadband Development may use up to $30 million strictly for applications where the 50% match formula is inadequate and allow them to match up to 75%. This will put those projects that can't make a business case at 50% in a separate program where they don't have to compete with other projects that can make it work at 50% or less. The MTA looks forward to working with the legislature and the governor to truly obtain border-to-border broadband in Minnesota, and I thank you for your support for rural broadband. And with that, I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, President Brent. Our next testifier is Brian Cranbier from Me Energy Cooperative. If you can identify yourself before the committee, proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Cranbier. I am the President and CEO of My Energy Cooperative. We are an electric distribution cooperative headquartered in Rushford, Minnesota, in the southeastern part of our great state. I am also chairman of My Broadband, which is a broadband partnership of an electric co-op, My Energy, Spring Grove Communications, and Mabel Cooperative Telephone. And we're in the job of delivering broadband to unserved and underserved residents of southeastern Minnesota. I'm also testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Rural Electric Association, and I would also like to disclose that I currently serve on the governor's task force for broadband. My broadband has been a recipient of two Minnesota Border-to-Border Broadband Awards and two Federal Reconnect Awards. We've extended fiber to the home to over 2,000 customers since the creation of our organization in 2018. The density of our electric cooperative is 5,500 miles, and we provide service to 19,000 members. That's a density of less than 4 members per mile of line. We are seeing the same density on our broadband builds out, which results in significantly higher broadband build-out costs. Therefore, like Mr. Christensen and the others, we very much support the creation of a new low-density program to complement the current border-to-border broadband program that mirrors the current pilot program. We would request the lower-density program become a permanent tool for the Office of Broadband Development. We would also like to express our support for the proposed $276 million for the border-to-border broadband program. This program has been a tremendous success, and its greatest need is simply funding for the program to get the job done. Finally, we would also support increasing the border-to-border cap from $5 million to $10 million in a future amendment. This number has not been adjusted for a number of years. With increasing costs of broadband, I think this would be a very appropriate alignment. Thank you for allowing me to share my comments today, and Representative Purcell for bringing this bill forward. I would stand for questions.
All right. Thank you, President Ryan. There are no further testifiers. Are there any public testifiers that would like to testify? Yes, you may come to the committee table. Please identify yourself before the committee and proceed. If you can, please keep your remarks under 2 minutes.
I'm Barbara Dura Klein from Leicester County. We're neighbors. And I'm here to talk on behalf, I've been a planner for Leicester County since January of 2018. And I wanted to comment on the small tax base, difficult time that the counties and townships will have moving ahead without that 75-25. We have already spent a significant amount of local dollars, a lot of CARES Act dollars. We did not dedicate our next federal dollars because RDOF came through. We weren't eligible for anything. But when we look at the rest of our county, which is two-thirds, we need 75-25 to proceed. And when you talk about broadband speeds, the average for some of our providers is 8 down and 1 up across the county. In town, it's 2 down, 1 up for a dentist in Montgomery, Minnesota. So we are really have desperate needs in outstate Minnesota, and are really pleased that you are carrying these two bills forward for us. That it will help us tremendously.
All right, thank you. And with that, we'll move to the discussion of the bill, the DE1 amendment. Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So, first of all, just so I understand, is this for local units of government only, or is this for private parties as well as local units of government?
Representative Purcell.
I believe the grant program goes to the private companies to provide the service.
Yeah.
Representative Jacob.
I guess the question would be, are private citizens eligible if they need an extension from that?
Representative Purcell.
I don't believe that's how the bill is structured.
Okay.
So Representative Jacob.
Second question then would be, what we found in Winona County is that even with the county kicking in a portion above and beyond what the state kicks in, we have some areas in the Bluff Country that are just cost prohibitive to reach. So if a company is granted the 75% and it's just nowhere close to the amount of money they need to hit some of these places, will they be required by statute to still go forward, even if the 25% that they have to cover is a large number? Will they be forced to provide service to everybody in the area?
Representative Purcell?
That's not my understanding of the bill, but maybe I could phone a friend who has been working on this longer than I have.
Who would you like to call, Representative Purcell?
No, if Mr. Zacharias can come up, or if you want to come up, you can come up,
I see someone
too
from the department. If you can identify yourself before the committee.
Thank you, members and Madam Chair. My name is Devin Bowdry, Legislative Liaison for DEEP. And I might need to hear the end of your question. You're asking if...
So some of the properties in Winona County are just... They're cost prohibitive to reach. So even if the state is paying 75%, the 25% that the company is required to pay, I mean, they still might not want to go to that site because the 25% is a huge number. So and if the goal is to reach everybody, will this statute force those companies at whatever it costs them for their 25% to reach those unserved residents?
Sorry, can you please identify yourself before the committee?
Yes, Devin Bowdry, Madam Chair, Representative. There's no forcing the organization to go. It's just an incentive. So right now we're talking about 75-25. And as previous testifiers have mentioned, the further out you get, the harder it is, or the more expensive it is. So possibly at a future date, we talk about adjusting that percentage match as well. But no, we would encourage an entity, a provider, to maybe get creative with different funding options. Could be their own. Localities can put up funding toward the project as well. So the office stands ready to help provide technical assistance to make this work.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciated the testimony of Mr. Christensen. He really explained well how these two funding mechanisms would work, the 50% and the 75%, so that cleared it up. Another testifier mentioned that we have a shortfall of state funding of $422 million. Your bill, Representative Purcell, spends about $276, which leaves about $146 million now. There's a lot of federal money coming in as well. So would you anticipate with these kind of funding levels that within 3 years, for example, we could have the state totally covered?
Representative Purcell. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson. I would love that to be the case, but I am no expert in this area, so I'm not sure if that's a question that you would be able to answer. Mr. Baldry.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's sort of a moving target to see where the funding between state and federal kind of meets in the middle here. Hard to estimate where we'll be in 3 years.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Just one follow-up then. It was mentioned, and I certainly agree that we don't want to lose an entire construction season. But as I recall, we've just had a couple of significant awarding of grants. One was $100 million and one was $60 million for the next 2 years. So your funding wouldn't be for this coming construction season. How far out would your funding take the program, Representative?
Representative Purcell or Mr. Baldry?
Madam Chair, Representative, so this funding would begin in fiscal year 24, so we'd be able to launch a grant program this year, this calendar year. But without this funding, we would have no program. We just closed our latest RFP, and we'll be awarding things, but with the uncertainty of the timing of the federal funds, we would need this to have construction season this year.
Representative Anderson.
Again, did you say you need this for this year's construction season?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, later in this calendar year.
Okay.
All right. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Representative Purcell, for bringing this bill forward. Broadband is essential and important to all farmers across America. I was just reading this FCC article where, you know, technologies and broadband will increase the yield of our farmers to 8.7% in increase and decrease this about 2.5% in spending. And so, you know, to ensure that we have more farmers in America, giving them the right tools and access is the right way to go. And so I appreciate you bringing this bill forward to align it with Biden's WIJ bills and then with Governor Walz's initiative. So thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang and Representative Priscilla. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's important. I think part of the area I serve, Pine County and Kanabec County, I think they're ranked 85th and 87th in the state for broadband. We are a very poor area for broadband service.
and this is critical. And one of the things that I think also needs to be addressed in there is the last mile of funding, you know, because oftentimes there's fiber in the ditch, but not able to hook up to a home. So I think, you know, maybe that's something that we could work together on, you know, in the amendment, if there's something that we can ensure that, you know, that last mile, making sure that connection does go to the home. Because as I've told people, you know, Interstate 35 goes from here to Duluth or, well, farther than that. But, you know, if there's no exits at Pine City or Hinckley or Askover or anywhere else, it doesn't do us a whole lot of good. And, you know, I think that's an important thing about, you know, remembering broadband is, you know, we can't make sure that we can't just fund it and put the cable in the ditch. We need to make sure that our homes and our businesses are able to be connected as well. So thank you for bringing this bill, and I appreciate continuing to work on this. So, thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I think we are all in agreement that this is important work. It's now officially under the umbrella of our committee. Study after study shows that students, businesses, farms, and families that have access to quality broadband do better, and the need for broadband is not going away. Our state statute says that every Minnesotan should have access to a connection of 100 megabits per second download and 20 megabits per second upload by 2026. House File 2313 will make a big difference in communities across the state and help us move toward meeting our state speed goals. I ask the committee for its support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, and with that, Representative Purcell renews her motion that House File 2313 be laid over possible inclusion. Members, our next bill is House File 1799, Representative Cha, on dairy industry regulation, provisions modified. Representative Cha, please move your bill.
Thank you, Chair Vang. I'd like to move H File 1799 for possible inclusion.
All right. House File 1799 be laid over, and the bill is before us. Representative Cha, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1799 addresses dairy industry regulation changes. Currently, Minnesota Statute 32D regulates dairy law, including inspection, enforcement, milk haulers, grade A dairy license, manufacturer grade dairy farms, dairy plants, dairy milk quality, purchasing, manufacturing, and processing, and dairy trade practices under 32D. HF 1799 changes the enforcement of dairy farms and dairy products to be added to food inspection under Chapter 34A. Current law treats milk and milk producers the same as packers and stockyards and commercial feed producers. HF 1799 moves inspection authority and penalties of violation for everything regulated under Chapter 32D, so that it is under Chapter 34A, under the law that regulates food inspection. I'd like to yield my time to Dr. Nicole Nieser. From the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you.
All right. Director Nicole, if you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Dr. Nicole Nieser, and I am the Director of the Dairy and Meat Inspection Division at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Thank you for hearing this bill. This bill is a bill that provides some minor technical changes that moves the high-level and inspection enforcement authorities for some part of the dairy industry and dairy products to be included under Chapter 34A so that they are consistent with all other foods. So this can be kind of confusing, and so I'll do my best to explain how it kind of works now and what we're trying to do. Currently, the authorities that cover more significant actions such as fines and penalties are mixed for dairy entities between Chapters 17 and 34A. Chapter 34A was created several years ago to create an updated and consistent and clear enforcement approach for all foods. At that time, because of how the dairy statutes were structured under Chapter 32, which is the predecessor to the current chapter, at that time, parts of the dairy industry were included in Chapter 34A, such as licensed plants and haulers, but some entities were not included, such as dairy farms and tankers. The Chapter 17 authority is based on an older regulatory framework and doesn't match well with the updated dairy statutes in Chapter 32 dairy law. It also leaves such things as the amount of the fine or appeal process more open-ended, and it leaves room for inconsistent application of its provisions. This bill would create a consistent approach and clear enforcement authorities for dairy entities and dairy products by moving all of those entities to be under the same inspection and enforcement authority. Of note, this will not affect the current routine regulatory framework used for inspections of dairy farms. This is already structured under Chapter 32D and the pasteurized milk ordinance. Dairy farmers will see no changes in how their inspector applies actions such as reinspections or other types of enforcement. These kinds of authorities we're talking about in this bill are more of the non-routine kinds of actions, such as if a dairy product is found to be contaminated and needs to be addressed, or someone was operating outside of the current licensing and permitting structure and selling adulterated dairy products.
All right, discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question for the testifier. Will this have any impact on the sale of raw milk?
Director Neisser.
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson. So the current authorities for sale of raw milk are in Chapter 32D, and those would stay the same. It would not change the outcome, the types of actions that could be taken in terms of if someone was selling an adulterated food product that had salmonella or something. And so it wouldn't impact that. If there were changes to the statute, it may, if depending upon what chapter or statute those were put into.
Representative, okay. Further discussion? All right, seeing none, closing remarks, Representative Chop.
Thank you, Chair Vang and Minority Leader Anderson and members of this committee for hearing this bill. And I would like to renew my motion to include HF1799 for possible inclusion.
All right, Representative Chow renews their motion that House File 1799 be laid over for possible inclusion. Now, the next bill we have is House File 1638, Representative Sansomera on nursery and plant protection provisions. And Representative Sansomera, whenever you're ready, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I would like to move House File 1638 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right, the bill is before us. Representative Samara, to your bill.
Thank you. So the Minnesota Department of Agriculture is responsible in Minnesota for the nursery law, and under Minnesota statutes that falls under Chapter 18H, with the purpose of preventing the introduction into and the dissemination within Minnesota of harmful plant pests. Nursery stock must be infected and certified free of harmful plant pests prior to sale. So in this bill, basically the MDA nursery program reviewed MS Chapter 18H with the Nursery Advisory Group and has a number of technical updates to propose to the chapter. For the most part, these are technical changes and do not significantly change the way that the program operates. There is one exception, which is nursery stock sales by municipalities and not-for-profits, some of which currently are exempt from a certificate under specific circumstances. Under this new proposal, entities would need a certificate, but fees for the certificate would be waived. I would now like to yield the rest of my time to my testifier, Mark Abramson, the Director of Plant Protection, who will be testifying on behalf of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
All right. Director Mark, if you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives, Mark Abrahamson, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Plant Protection Division Director.
So as the representative introduced, this is a very set of very technical changes to chapters 18H and 18G. So essentially, we walk through with our advisory group, which contains a broad representation from industry, including Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association. We looked for terms that are no longer up to date, references are no longer up to date, places where we could state things more plainly and updated language as it is. So as explained, these really have no change to the program. The most substantial change to the program is the need for municipalities and nonprofits to have a certificate in certain situations.
All right. I see no further testifiers. Discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know I would. Anyway, what's the reason for lowering the cost of the, or the threshold for having to get a permit from 2,000 down to 1,000?
Director Mark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson. So that was, that came over our advisory group, and so it aligns better with some language from Department of Revenue and their statutes in terms of when taxes or something else would be collected. So that was a recommendation that we went with.
Further discussion? Seeing none, closing remarks. Representative Santamaria.
Thank you. As I said, this is the bill that is technical in nature. This is the department just telling us some necessary language changes and technical changes that they need, and I hope that everyone can support this for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Members, the next bill that we have is Representative Purcell's House File 1678. On genetically engineered organisms. Whenever you're ready, Representative Purcell, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 1678 be included in a possible omnibus bill from the Agriculture Committee.
All right. Representative Purcell moves that House File 1678 be laid over a possible inclusion to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this bill would simply eliminate the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's duty to review and approve or deny a person or company's proposed release of a genetically engineered crop or other genetically engineered agricultural organism in Minnesota. Instead, MDA would accept a review or possibly add additional requirements for a permit issued by a federal agency. So could be the United States Department of Agriculture, could be the Environmental Protection Agency, or the United States Food and Drug Administration.
All right, I see that you have a testifier, Denise Teed, a supervisor. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Denise Teed. I'm a section manager for the seed, noxious weed, hemp, and biotechnology programs at the Department of Agriculture. We're putting forward this bill to bring this statute up to date. So this language was introduced at the time that before genetically modified organisms were commonly used in agriculture in Minnesota. And there have been a lot of changes both in the technology that's used for genetic modification and at the federal level in terms of regulations. So these changes would really bring us into alignment with the federal process that is in place for regulating biotechnology.
All right. Discussion to the bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And whoever brings candy, I want to say thank you. Anyway.
That is our CA, Amanda.
Could you give us an example of something where this bill may pertain to? GMOs are kind of can be a hot topic, and I'm wondering just what this does, and could you give an example of
sure. something? So the USDA has a biotechnology regulatory services. That agency did not exist prior to, these products being used in agriculture. So it's an agency that regulates these products at the federal level. And so if a company is developing a product, that agency determines if the product is regulated or not, and they would issue a permit for a release for that product. We have the opportunity in Minnesota to review those permits and to apply permit conditions if we feel they're necessary, but we do not issue permits independently. And right now, the way the statute is written, it would allow Minnesota to issue permits independently of a federal agency. So these changes would really direct the regulatory authority to at the federal level, but still allow Minnesota to have requirements for releases in Minnesota.
Representative Anderson. Okay. Further discussion? Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So under the appendix where it talks about definitions, unreasonable adverse effects on the environment, how is unreasonable determined?
So each federal agency has environmental assessments that they do, and under their authorities, they look at different aspects of environmental impacts. So, for example, the USDA APHIS is responsible for plant pest risks, and that really came about because of the way genetic engineering was done originally, which is, how those genes were inserted. Sometimes there were additional sequences that went in with the insertion that potentially proposed a plant pest risk. And so each agency looks at those risks and evaluates those risks. So, and they each have their own criteria. So we have the opportunity to review those risk assessments at the state level. But the assessments currently are done at the federal level.
Representative Jacob.
Well, my concern would be is what's unreasonable today, is that the same measure that would be determined as unreasonable in 5 years? Will this become a moving target for people to have to reach?
Supervisor Denise.
Well, I think, because the risk assessment process is well defined, it is spelled out, but it also can change. So it could potentially become a moving target, but it is a defined process, and there's defined data that goes into each risk assessment.
Just a comment. Feels like a moving target. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions?
Chair Vang.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, Representative Jacob, we're looking at the appendix part, so the unreasonable adverse effects to the environment is not determined at the state level. My understanding is that this is determined by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, so it's a little bit out of our hands.
Representative Jacob?
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay. Seeing no further questions, closing remarks, Representative Purcell.
I thank you for consideration of including this updated language in our omnibus bill.
All right. Representative Purcell renews their motion that House File 1678 be laid over for possible inclusion. House File 1678 is laid over for possible inclusion. The final bill that we have for today is Representative Ream, House File 1868 on international marketing funding. Representative Ream, whenever you're ready, please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm here to present House File 1868 for possible inclusion in the Agriculture Omnibus Bill.
All right. The bill is before us. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm here to brag about Minnesota. I have a number of rankings I'd like to share with you. So right now, Minnesota ranks number 7 nationally in total agricultural production. $21.3 billion annually. In terms of national ranking, we're number 1 in sugar beets, wild rice, red kidney beans, and turkey. We are number 2 in sweet corn, green peas, hogs, number 3 for soybeans, dry beans, sunflower, number 6 for red meat, cheese, and honey, and number 7 for milk. Right now, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture currently has only one person working full-time in its entire international marketing office. And by comparison, a neighboring state that starts with the letter W, they have a much significantly larger budget with about 5 employees working. So this bill before us would increase the staffing by 2 employees. So it would be $250,000 in the fiscal year 2024, an additional $250,000 in the fiscal year 2025, an ongoing appropriation. And with that, I would like to call upon 2 testifiers. The first one will be from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
All right, Commissioner Vobel, thank you for being here. If you can please identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Andrea Vobel. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. This committee has heard several times our mission, and a big part of that mission is to ensure the strength and resilience of the agricultural economy. And certainly we feel that the international trade and marketing team that we have at the department is essential to helping meet that goal. As Representative Ree mentioned, we do have this in our budget, in the governor's budget, but we have currently 1 staff devoted to international trade. I want to give him a shout out. His name is Jeff Phillips. And he does an incredible job with the little amount of funding that he has. And he does respond or report to our marketing manager, who is also here today, Emily Jervy, who can answer all the tough questions. But we did export, Minnesota exported in 2021, $9.4 billion in agricultural exports. So that ranked us 4th in the nation behind California, Illinois, and Iowa. We know that there's more that we can do if we had more capacity, that being people and programmatic money to do those things. As Representative Ree mentioned, Wisconsin has 5 people devoted to this activity. Iowa has 5, Missouri has 4, and North Dakota has 2. And so we know that there's, again, they have a lot of bandwidth to do things, and we would like to be able to do more as well. We focus on a lot of different types of products, whether that's bulk, commodities, intermediate things like feed or soybean meal, and then, of course, our consumer-oriented packaged goods, things that you would see in the grocery store. So there's a wide range of things that we would focus on. And certainly one of the things that we'd like to do is more export education for all the entrepreneurs that exist here in Minnesota. We have a lot of great, wonderful Minnesota food companies who want to do a lot more domestically but internationally as well. And so we really want to be able to provide that export education opportunities for them. Again, those folks who are using some of these local Minnesota goods that, again, might not have the expertise to figure out how to get into those larger markets. Other things we'd love to do are have additional in-market reps. So we have 1 in Taiwan that's been really successful. We know there's other emerging markets around the world that we'd like to be able to reach into. But again, we'll need additional capacity to do that. So we are just very grateful to Representative Ream for her support of the program, and we're very supportive of her bill, and any additional capacity we can add to this group, we would very much appreciate.
All right. Next testifier we have is Corey Bennett. If you can identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Corey Bennett with the Minnesota Soybean Growers Association. Thank you to Representative Ream for bringing this bill forward. We strongly support this bill. As you can imagine, international trade and trade in general is very, very important to certainly our soybean farmers in the state of Minnesota. So important that not only do we appreciate the investment that the state of Minnesota makes, but our own checkoff dollars have spent over $4 million over the last 5 years just on marketing and trade alone. So our farmers are stepping up in that regard and certainly know the importance with regards to soybean trade. When you look at soybeans just in the state of Minnesota from our 2021 crop, we had about $4 billion worth of soybeans grown in the state of Minnesota. 26% of that crop is exported. And half of the U.S. crop in the state of Minnesota, just nationwide, half the crop of soybeans is traded and exported as well. So when you can imagine the economic impact that that has on our, as an economic driver for our rural communities and our rural economics, it is absolutely huge. When you look at the beans just in the state of Minnesota and where they travel after harvest, those beans leave in a variety of different places. If you're practically like up in the Northwest, a lot of those beans get railed out to the Pacific Northwest. A lot of the beans also get put down the Mississippi River in barges and then get placed on barges then in Houston and get transported out there. But one of the most exciting things that we have right now is some refurbishing of the Port of Duluth, which is getting to be a really large place for us to start exporting beans, and we're very, very excited about that. A lot of those beans will go to Europe and North Africa, and so we're excited about that. But as also you can imagine, maintaining some of the relationships and some of the markets that are existing is extremely important as well. We saw those disruptions a couple of years ago and what that meant for soybean prices in the state of Minnesota, which made them pretty much plummet. So keeping those relationships existing is important. When you look at our three biggest exporters for Minnesota soybeans right now, it's China, Canada, and Mexico. Those are three of our biggest, and then followed by South Korea and Japan. But there's also some opportunities with emerging markets as well, and we're excited about those because although it's important to maintain what we have and keep those relationships strong, we keep producing more and more soybeans on the same amount of acres, and it's important that we keep looking for different markets. So when you look at for markets such as Colombia, the Philippines, Morocco, Taiwan, Vietnam, India, those are very, very important markets, and they're emerging markets, and they're looking for different types of soybeans as well. They're looking for not only soybean meal for their livestock industries, but they're also looking at non-GMO and GMO types of organic types of food-grade soybeans for tofu, for instance, and looking at different oils for such as Hyalic, which goes into cooking oil, and things like that. So those are very, very important, and we're very excited about this bill, and I want to thank Representative Rain for bringing it forward, and we strongly support it, Madam Chair. So thank you for your time.
All right, thank you. Seeing no further testifiers, are there any public testifiers that would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion of the bill. Oh, Representative Cha.
Thanks, Chair Vang. I really like this bill, and I'm really excited, right, because we're number four. And I'm excited because I think we're going to be number one or number two in the coming years, and especially because this aligns with Purcell's bill, HF 2313, about broadband across, you know, the state of Minnesota, right? Because for us to be an international player, we need the broadband. So I'm excited about this bill, and good luck. Thanks.
Right. Representative Burkle. Okay. Further discussions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you. We have time. A lot of our big grain companies, the CHS, Cargill, Bunge, have, you know, offices or facilities, you know, in the Far East, Europe, all over, and they actually do the actual selling and exporting. So what would these people actually do in terms? Minnesota doesn't really sell anything. We don't have grain to sell as a state. So what would these people do in terms of expanding markets?
Deputy Commissioner Andrea.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Anderson, for the question. There's quite a few things. So we do work very closely with some of the international groups like the U.S. Grains Council and the U.S. Meat Export. There's a number of things that we have that happen where we'll have a lot of maybe folks internationally who come to Minnesota. This happens quite often, who are interested in Minnesota product and the quality of the Minnesota grain, particularly, or meats. So a lot of times we'll have buyers come in. We call them buyer missions, that they'll come in. So it's our responsibility to show them all of the great things that Minnesota has to offer. Similar, again, to as Mr. Bennett mentioned, in terms of building relationships abroad. So again, we have those relationships that have been solidified for a number of years, but those need to be fostered as well, in addition to the emerging markets that we see. This is really a relationship-based part of agriculture, where you have to be in front of these folks and make the case about why Minnesota agriculture is the place to be, or where they need to be purchasing from. So again, as I talked about, there's the bulk commodities that I think are really get to what you're talking about, and some of these other intermediary things, like we talk about feed, we talk about food ingredients, we talk about soybean meal or things like ethanol. But again, also those consumer-oriented goods. So if it's sauces, baked goods,
dairy products, anything, processed vegetables, those types of things. So that's, again, where they would have, again, building those relationships. It's, again, when we talk about export education. So we have a number of Minnesota entrepreneurs who are interested in accessing some of these larger markets but don't necessarily have the education to understand how to access those. We also work with what are called SRTGs. They're called state regional trade groups. We have one in the Midwest called Food Export Midwest that we work with closely. Again, these we need people on the ground to be able to have some of these conversations, these relationship building capabilities, provide the education, and then again also help people understand what Minnesota has to offer when they come here, which is quite often.
Representative Anderson. Representative Sensenmayer.
Thank you. What is the percentage of food that Minnesota imports in relation to how much it exports?
Deputy Commissioner.
Chair Vang and Representative Sensenmayer, that's a great question. I don't know off the top of my head, and I'm looking at our folks, and I don't know that they know quite right off the head, the top of their head either, so we'll make sure to get that back to you.
Okay. Right. I mean, I even like a rough ball, like is it, I mean, do you have any kind of rough ballpark number?
Deputy?
Chair Vang, Representative Sensenmayer. I think I don't have necessarily ballpark. I think also it's sort of nuanced in the way that it depends, you know, again, when I'm talking bulk commodities or some of the things that, you know, ready-to-eat foods or consumer CPGs or consumer packaged goods, there's sort of export and import numbers related to all of those things. So collectively, I think we'd have to do a little bit of analysis to get that information to you.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to see that. And I guess the reason I ask, you know, is I got a chance to meet with the Consulate General from Japan earlier this term, and he was talking to me about, you know, all of the importing that Japan does. And, you know, on the one hand, like, I find that exciting as a Japanese-American. It's exciting to see that connection. And, you know, we live in an interconnected world, and I believe that, you know, we should recognize that, and I think the staffing position would help you all recognize that. I think on the other hand, when I am forward thinking, I think we've seen some of the ways that our globalized economy of importing and exporting also has its dangers, right, and also has negative things to it when we think about climate goals, right, and how we're going to meet some of our climate goals if we're continuing to do all this exporting and importing. I think about some of the health concerns, especially that we've seen from, you know, globalized disease and COVID. And so I guess I totally support funding these positions because I think that's the reality is that we are doing exporting and we should be supporting that right now. But I think there's a bigger conversation to be had. I don't know that I believe our goal is just to export as much as possible, especially when we don't know how that's in relation to how much we are importing and are we contributing to a larger global problem.
Okay. Further discussion? Closing remarks, Representative Reen.
Thank you, members, and thank you, Madam Chair. We're running out of time, so I just want to say thank you to the people who came to testify, and thank you for hearing this bill, and I would like to see this laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
All right, Representative renews their motion that House File 1868 be laid over for possible inclusion, and House File 1868 is laid over. Members, our next meeting is on Thursday, March 9, 2023. We have a large full agenda on Thursday, and so amendments are due, I believe, Wednesday at 9 a.m., so just want to make sure amendments are due in time. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.